Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to be reading two verses, texts 10 and text 11 of Canto 3, Chapter 9. And especially want to focus on just reading these purports. They're, one's a three-page purport and the other's a page-and-a-half purport. Kind of unusual for this section, so Prabhupada wanted to expand on the message of the verses, so he wrote long purports. I'd just like to read the whole thing. Text 10. Well, a little background is needed, I think. Lord Brahma is praying for, he's praying directly. The personality of Godhead is before him, and he's praying for creative energy, that is, you know, the capacity to do his service. In his case, the service is reconstructing the universe after the end of his night. So even he's done it many times, he's understanding his position, that he's dependent on the empowerment of the personality of Godhead to do his service properly. So he's because the scale of Brahma's service is universal, right, creating universe, he's contemplating the Lord's position, the living entity's position subordinate to him, those living entities that are receiving what is intended, what the Lord intends to give to them, his mercy, and there are those that don't. They adamantly don't want. And as a result, they neglect the process to connect themselves with the Supreme Lord, and as a result, they struggle very hard in material existence. Not by the Lord's intention, but by their choice. So here's the verse and purport of text 10. Such non-devotees engage their senses in very troublesome and extensive work, and they suffer insomnia at night because their intelligence constantly breaks their sleep with various mental speculations. They are frustrated in all their various plans by supernatural power. Even great sages, if they are against your transcendental topics, must rotate in this material world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is first of three pages. As described in the previous verse, people who have no taste for the devotional service of the Lord are occupied in material engagements. Most of them engage during the daytime in hard physical labor. The senses are engaged in very extensively in troublesome duties in the gigantic plants of heavy industrial enterprise. The owners of such factories are engaged in finding a market for their industrial products, and the laborers are engaged in extensive production involving huge mechanical arrangements. Quote, factory, unquote, is another name for hell. Pretty blunt. At night, hellishly engaged persons take advantage of wine and women to satisfy their tired senses, but they are not able to have sound sleep because their various mental speculative plans constantly interrupt their sleep. Because they suffer from insomnia, sometimes they feel sleepy in the morning for lack of sufficient rest. by the arrangement of supernatural power, even the great scientists and thinkers of the world suffer frustration of their various plans and thus rot in the material world birth after birth. The language doesn't make it sound very attractive. A great scientist may make discoveries in atomic energy for the quick destruction of the world and may be awarded the best prize in recognition for his service, parentheses, or disservice. But he also has to undergo the reaction of his work by rotating in the cycle of repeated births and deaths under the superhuman law of material nature. All these people who are against the principles of devotional service are destined to rotate in the material world without fail. Next paragraph. This verse particularly mentions that even sages who are averse to the principles of devotional service to the Lord are also condemned to undergo the terms of material existence, not only in this age, but formerly also. There were many sages who tried to invent their own systems of religion without reference to devotional service of the Lord. But there cannot be any religious principle without devotional service to the Lord. The Supreme Lord is the leader of the entire range of living entities, and no one can be equal to or greater than him. Even the Lord's impersonal feature and all-pervading localized feature cannot be on an equal level with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, there cannot be any religion or system of genuine philosophy for the advancement of living entities without the principle of devotional service. Paragraph. The impersonalists who take much trouble in penance and austerity for self-liberation may approach the impersonal Brahma-jyoti, but ultimately, because of not being situated in devotional service, they glide down again to the material world to undergo another term of material existence. This is confirmed as follows. It's a quote from Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Nyanyera vindaksha vimuktimani nas tvayasta bhavat avashuddha buddhaya arulya krishtrena param padam tata patanjado nadrita yushmat angrayaha. Translation. Persons who are falsely under the impression of being liberated without devotional service to the Lord may reach the goal of Brahma-jyoti, but because of their impure consciousness, for want of shelter of the Vaikuntha lokas, such so-called liberated persons again fall down into material existence. Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Paragraph. Therefore, no one can manufacture any system of religion without the principles of devotional service to the Lord. As we find in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the initiator of religious principles is the Lord himself. That's spoken by Yamaraj in his talks with the Yamadutas, after the Yamadutas were foiled in taking Ajamila. Vishnudutas had come and stopped them. They went to complain. Hey, Yamaraj, what happened? We thought you were in charge and somebody stopped us. And who are those people? They were so beautiful. But you're the Lord of death, and who can defy death? Who is it that can defy death? Who are those people? What's going on? He said, they're the agents of the person that I serve. You're serving me, I'm serving Lord Vishnu. And the principles of Dharma, so he stated, Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam, often quoted phrase spoken by Yamaraj, where the principles of Dharma are pranitam, they're established by Bhagavan. Dharmam sakshat bhagavat pranitam. By the Supreme Lord Bhagavan. He alone can establish dharma. So, unless you're Bhagavan, don't go around trying to establish dharma. Because it's not even possible. In Bhagavad Gita, we also find that the Lord condemns all forms of religion other than that which entails the process of surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Any system which leads one to the devotional service of the Lord and nothing else is actually religion or philosophy. Oh, here it is. In the sixth canto, we find statements of Yamaraj, the controller of unfaithful living entities. Here's the verse. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam navai vidur rishiyo napi devaha na siddha mukya asura manushyaha kuta kuto nu vidyadhara charanadayaha. Then he gives the Svayambhu, Narada Shambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishmo, Valir, Vyasaki, Vayam. The principles of religion are indicated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and no one else, including the sages and demigods, can manufacture any such principles. Since even great sages and demigods are unauthorized to inaugurate such principles of religion, what to speak of others? The so-called mystics, demons, human beings, vidyadharas and charanas living in the lower planets. 12 personalities are agents of the authorized, agents of the Lord authorized to speak and propagate the principles of religion, and their names are given. Brahma Narada, Lord Shiva, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka Maharaj, Bhishma, Bali, Shukadeva Goswami, and Yamaraj himself. Paragraph. The principles of religion are not open to ordinary living entities. They are just to bring the human being onto the platform of morality, nonviolence, etc., are necessary for misguided persons because unless one is moral and nonviolent, one cannot understand the principles of religion. To understand what is actually religion is very difficult, even if one is situated in the principles of morality and nonviolence. It is very confidential, because as soon as one is conversant with the real principles of religion, he is at once liberated to the eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Therefore, one who is not situated in the principles of devotional service to the Lord should not pose himself as a religious leader of the innocent public. The Ishopanishad emphatically forbids this nonsense. Prabhupada knows how to use strong words in the right way. In the following mantra, Andham tamahak pravishanti ye sambhutim upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yau sambhutyam rataha. Ishopanishad 12. A person in ignorance of the principles of religion, who therefore does nothing in the matter of religion, is far better than the person who misguides others in the name of religion, without reference to the factual religious principles of devotional service. Such so-called leaders of religion are sure to be condemned by Brahma and other great authorities. And what the verse says is, those that do that, they andham, tamaha, pravishanti. They go to the lowest regions of existence in the name of guiding people in religious principles that are not in line with that which is coming from Lord Vishnu. The next verse continues along the same line, just, you know, a different variety of, you know, the tribulations of material existence. And it's, we discussed this a bit before, but from the earlier verses, it's the irony for Lord Brahma is he knows this perfectly well, and he has to create that place where that's what's going to be going on. He didn't like that. I mean, but that's his service. That's his service because it's invested in him to do that service by Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu doesn't like it either. But because living entities have free will and they misuse their free will, so they have a place to reside where they cannot impede the natural life of those who are abiding by the will of God. In other words, there's the Vaikuntha realm and there's this created material realm. And the created material realm, Brahma's in charge of creating it according to the Lord's plan, and he knows very well, once again, the mischief that goes on in that created realm. And he feels not reluctant to do his service, but he feels pain that this is what living entity is going to do in this place that I create. So what's coming up is he wants to not only have the capacity to create, but have the capacity to awaken transcendental knowledge in the hearts of those that are willing to receive it, to give them the escape hatch, the way to get out of the material conditioning that they're subjecting themselves to. And that leads into this verse. Oh my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears. They have very special ears. They can see you through their ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed. And you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. Report. The statement here that the Lord manifests himself before the devotees in the form in which the devotee likes to worship him indicates that the Lord becomes subordinate to the desire of the devotee, so much so that he manifests his particular form as the devotee demands. This demand of the devotee is satisfied by the Lord because he, that's the Lord, is pliable in terms of the transcendental living service of the devotee. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Yea, yata mam prapadyante tangs to type of ajam yaham. What does that mean? That the yata mam prapadyante, as they prapadyante, surrender unto me, I reciprocate. They have a regard for me, I reciprocate according to their regard for me. Tangs to type of bhajam yaham, as they worship me, I reciprocate. We should note, however, that the Lord is never the order supplier of the devotee. Here in this verse, it is particularly mentioned, tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita. This indicates the efficiency achieved through the execution of matured devotional service, or prema, love of Godhead. This state of prema is achieved by the gradual process of development from faith to love. On faith, one associates with bona fide devotees, and by such association one becomes engaged in bona fide devotional service, which includes proper initiation and the execution of the primary devotional duties prescribed in the revealed scriptures. This is clearly indicated herein by the word shrutekshita. The shrutekshita path is to hear from bona fide devotees who are conversant in Vedic wisdom, free from mundane sentiment. By this bona fide hearing process, the neophyte devotee becomes cleansed of all material rubbish, and thus he becomes attached to one of the many transcendental forms of the Lord as described in the Vedas. In the final paragraph, this attachment of the devotee to a particular form of the Lord is due to natural inclination. Each and every living entity is originally attached to a particular type of transcendental service because he is eternally the servitor of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya says that the living entity is eternally a servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Therefore, every living entity has a particular type of service with the Lord eternally. This particular attachment is invoked by practice of regulative devotional service to the Lord, and thus the devotee becomes attached to the eternal form of the Lord, exactly like one who is already eternally attached. This attachment for a particular form of the Lord is called Svarupa Siddhi. The Lord sits on the lotus heart of the devotee in the eternal form the pure devotee desires, and thus the Lord does not part from the devotee as confirmed in the previous verse. The Lord, however, does not disclose himself to a casual or inauthentic worshiper to be exploited. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:25. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha. Rather, by yoga maya, the Lord remains concealed to the non-devotees, or casual devotees, who are serving their sense gratification. The Lord is never visible to the pseudo-devotees who worship the demigods in charge of universal affairs. The conclusion is... da-da-da-da... that the Lord cannot become the order supplier of a pseudo-devotee, but he is always prepared to respond to the desire of a pure, unconditional devotee who is free from all tinges of material infection. So in a few pages, Prabhupada really covered a lot of territory, right? From the non-devotees to the topmost devotees. And bunch of things in between. A prison house has two functions. There's, you know, the lesser and the greater function. Minimally, the prison house is to keep law-breaking people from the law-abiding people, so they can't... It's a house of detention. They get to live, they have a place to stay. It's very restricted, but their place to stay, where they can't harm those that are law-abiding. But the greater purpose is the house of correction. So euphemistically they call it, you know, correctional institutions. But the material world is likened unto a prison. Compared to Vaikuntha, it's a place where there's rebellious souls. So they have the free will to be rebellious, and when they exhibit that rebelliousness, they're given a place to stay under the care of the prison in charge, Durga. And her business is to keep people in order in that prison house. But the other, there's a more benevolent intention of creation, and that's described in Bhagavad Gita also, where along with creation, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, along with generations of men and demigods, I sent forth this process of sacrifice. Well, that's that corrective measure, that while we're here in the material world, by the process of sacrifice, we can regain our natural position of engaging in service to the Supreme Lord, although it's the form of sacrifice, because elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita there's various ways that sacrifice. People like, some like it this way, some like it that way, some like it another way. But the principle is the principle of sacrifice unto the Supreme. Something that we're involved with in the mood of being enjoyers separate from the Lord, we make some at least token acknowledgement of the Supreme. And we recognize the authority of the Vedas above us to guide us in how to do that. And there's qualified persons, brahmanas, who are guiding us in the principles and of sacrifice. So there's uplifting elements for generations of men and demigods. How to reconnect with the Supreme. The correction principle is the principle of sacrifice. And as that principle of sacrifice grows, the quality of goodness grows, and in that quality of goodness, the capacity to understand the Supreme through the medium of when sacrifice becomes more replete or more developed in the form of devotional service. And that devotional service, when it becomes matured, there's, in everything that one does, there's constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. And in that absorbed state of remembrance, what we're hearing here is the Lord manifests exactly in that form according to our natural desire. This is a question devotees ask about, so we'll go there a bit. Each, just like if you have a bag of seeds, like there's some flowering plants outside here, very nicely growing, very colorful. They're of a certain variety. So let's take, say, a bunch of marigold seeds. You know, there's some that are the orange color, some that are the yellow color, some that are, you know, the more puffy, some that the petals are more straight. But even if you even have a bag that's just like all of that kind, each one is going to be a little different than the next one, however many there are. So, similarly, in a seed-like condition, each of us has an eternal relationship with the personality of Godhead, unique, even though maybe under certain categories, but nonetheless each one unique in the relationship with the personality of Godhead. And by the process of devotional service, it's like sprouting that seed. It starts to grow. And as that natural inclination to serve the Supreme Lord in a very unique an individual and personal way starts to grow, it manifests. One of the things that manifests is mentioned here, an attraction for a particular form of the Lord. And doesn't mention, but in a particular mood of a particular form of the Lord. So not only the Lord manifests a form according to our attraction, but he reciprocates in a mood according to our mood of love. And that's not something that we can just like cosmetically paint on and peel off and put another, let's try this one out, let's try that one out. It's intrinsic. It's of the soul. And there's no use in just like speculating. I wonder if it's this one or that one or the other one. That's not how it's realized. Rather, the process is described in Nectar Devotion, where through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that's what we're doing, regulative devotional service according to the Vidhis, the rules and regulations of devotion, gradually, as mentioned here, the all material rubbish is cleansed away, and thus he becomes attracted to one of the many transcendental forms of the Lord as described in the Vedas. And specific to the followers of Lord Chaitanya, as Lord Chaitanya accepted, according to the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, from whom all Ramadi Murtushukala Niyamena Tishtan, all other forms of the Lord emanate. He's the source, including the forms of Lord Vishnu through whom the avatars of Vishnu appear. Vishnu is also an emanation, a kala portion of a plenary portion of the Supreme Lord. But Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and Lord Chaitanya was attracted to the form of Krishna. And naturally so, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, following Lord Chaitanya, become attracted to the form of Krishna. And the worship, the mood of worship of Lord Chaitanya was similarly in the mood of Krishna in Vrindavan, the intimate form of love, meaning, but the intimate form of love, meaning not just the majestic regard for Krishna as he exhibits in Dwarka, for example, with his replete with all opulences, and thus a different mood, not the same intimacy mood, but the mood of awe and reverence. Anyway, the followers of Lord Chaitanya are, by his love and teachings and those of his followers, are nurtured in that direction to the love of Krishna in Vrindavan. There were followers of Lord Chaitanya, very intimate followers of Lord Chaitanya, that had a different mood of love. Murari Gupta is one of them. Murari Gupta was approximately in age Lord Chaitanya's peer, a little elder, and Murari Gupta was an ardent devotee of Ramachandra. In fact, Lord Chaitanya at one point indicated that he was an incarnation of Hanuman. But his mood was love for Ramachandra. So one time, Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were seated together, and Murari Gupta came to see them and offered his respects. And Lord Chaitanya gave him an instruction. He was testing him. He said later he was testing him. He said, Murari, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why don't you just worship Krishna? Within Krishna, all the forms of the Lord are to be found just worship Krishna and be happy. So Rari was taking this as an instruction from Lord Chaitanya. And he loved Lord Chaitanya. So he wanted to follow the instruction of Lord Chaitanya, but he couldn't. He was trying all night long. He was unable to sleep because love for, how can Hanuman think other than Ram? How can, he can't think other than Ram. So he couldn't sleep all night long. He was taking the instruction very seriously. It wasn't lightly, take it or leave it. The casual. It wasn't casual. It was very devotional. He came back crying the next morning. I can't give up Ram. Please do something. Lord Chaitanya smiled and said, I just wanted to show how strong is your devotion for Ram. This is wonderful. You can. I'll take the instruction away. To say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, it doesn't mean like everything else becomes dismissed. There's many other examples in Chaitanya Leela where Lord Chaitanya had the deepest of regard and respect for others who had a strong affinity for worship of other forms of the Supreme Lord, or Vishnu Tattva forms of the Lord. Nonetheless, and they were lovers of Lord Chaitanya. They were very intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. Each one of us, back to the message of the purport, each one of us there's a seed of love of God. It's already there. And that seed is nourished and fructified and fully matured by the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting and remembering. And in due course of time, after cleansing, that attraction for that natural love for the Personality of Godhead awakens. So within these prayers of Lord Brahma, he's disclosing what that process of overcoming the suffering condition of the living entities in the material world. He's disclosing it. He's going to be appealing. It's like the ground, the foundation for his appeal for the empowerment to do the creation which the Lord wants him to do, and the empowerment of the Supreme Lord to give this process of hearing and chanting some efficacy so the living entities don't have to suffer. Compassion is a natural quality of a devotee of the Lord. It's a natural quality of the Lord. It's a natural quality of the Lord's devotee. Just touch on the irony one more time, because there are things that we may have to do in life that are not directly awakening love of God in ourselves or in our dealings with others. All kinds of things we have to do. And while we know that there's things that awaken directly love of God, and gee, I wish I could just do that. There's other things. There's other apparent necessities because of the embodied state of the living being. And the embodied state is because of extraneous desires. If we didn't have extraneous desires, we wouldn't need a material body. We have a material body because we have extraneous desires. Extraneous meaning other than pursuing love of God. And we're called upon to do some. I mean, what career out of all the hours of work that the persons here in this room do each week to take care of your occupational duty, how much of that is directly awakening love of God? We do so many things that aren't directly like that. And in our outside of the workplace, so many things we do. So it's like, when the understanding is, like, we're not at Lord Brahma's level, but here's Lord Brahma, he's got to do some things that's going to create the whole circumstance. So, career orientation is not just like, so I can put bread on the table and pay the mortgage. It's for our house or rent or whatever it is. It's also the enactment of our desires. And it may look like I'm just being responsible. It may also be responsible, but it's also a fulfillment of our desires. We like to work. We like to, like, you know, have fruits from our work, and we like to enjoy the fruits of our work. It's a material desire. It's not like that's awful. It's just a statement of that's a fact. So there are things that we do in life that it's not just direct devotional service, and not just by circumstance we were obliged. It's part of the condition that we're in. And so we're connecting those things. Do it for Krishna. Or give some of the fruits of that unto Krishna for gradual purification. Specific to Lord Brahma, in Sri Brahma Samhita, there is the same sequence that this third canto Bhagavatam describes. In other words, they're parallel messages. The source is different, but the message is the same message. Lord Brahma undergoes the same things described in the earlier chapters of this canto, where he's pursuing self-realization. He's been born on top of the lotus flower and seeking what is his duty, and he hears tapa, and he engages in tapa, and he gets these realizations. And he describes those realizations in the form of the Govindam Stotra, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami, those nice prayers. At the end of all those nice prayers, so here he is, he's enlightened. He's not like just like feeling better about himself. He's fully God conscious. Fully realized. After those Govinda Stotra prayers complete, there's another set of verses that conclude the chapter. Chapter 5 of Sri Brahma Samhita, where he then states a puzzlement to Lord Vishnu. Here I am. I'm in this awkward position where I now understand in fullness who are you and what is my duty, but the awkwardness is now I still have this creative impetus. I like want to create a universe, and you've empowered me to do so. So if I do so, and am I not going to become entangled in material existence? I'm reluctant, I'm concerned, but I have this impetus at the same time. May sound familiar to some of us. Circumstantially different, but in principle very similar. So the reply given by Lord Vishnu to Lord Brahma is very similar to what's here. That is, by engaging in the process of, by the direct devotional practices or processes of hearing and chanting specifically, the binding feature constricting, confining, prison-like feature of the material duties that one does is no longer in effect, and instead those activities, when joined with hearing and chanting, are as purifying and as liberating as the direct devotional practices. In the purport, there's a section where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes the threefold activities of a living being: body, mind, and social, interpersonal. And he lists, here's some examples of body activities, here's some example of mental activities, here's some example of social activities. And as long as we're embodied, we're going to have those three: gross, subtle, and interpersonal activities. Those are to be joined with bhakti, practices of bhakti. It can be a dilemma for the practitioner that's trying to figure out, how do I, like this phrase that you use, how do I balance between this and that, between the devotional and the worldly? But it's not a matter of balance. Sounds like either or. How much of this do I put on the pan scale, and how much of that do I put on the pan scale and make a balance? It's not either or. It's a matter of rather including bhakti within each of the things that I do. So it's not either or. And as the strength of devotion awakens stronger, 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 the sense of deriving happiness from the material portion diminishes. I may still continue it, but the sense of deriving happiness and, you know, my existence is the upadhi of, you know, whatever, you know, I'm an engineer, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm a whatever it is. That we don't identify with that and find our happiness from that, it's something that we do in service to Krishna, because the prominent, what's growing, is bhakti. As Brajbihari mentioned last night, just before the Sunday feast lecture, one of the services that I've taken on, a portion of my services, working with China. And I think I can disclose this. I do a conference call or a Skype call where periodically, basically it's once a month, because they have other people doing classes on, and the theme is devotee care that goes on, because they don't have temples. They can't have temples. The government doesn't allow them to do that. So they don't. They just do things in homes and so forth. The government knows that, but, you know, that's what they do. And how to take care of the devotees. So they have a whole initiative, devotee care. And just this past week, Thursday, this like some three, four days ago, it's on a Skype call, when I was discussing this very same point over the, you know, there's a translator doing the translation in Chinese. In devotee care, we have to take care of people who become devotees. And there's bodily, mental, and interpersonal. Family, relations with others, set, you know, whatever the interpersonal things are. We need to do those things when we're extending care to others. But a little bit like the Bharat Maharaj description. If you just take care of those things, but you neglect the soul, you're saving the coat of the drowning man, but not the drowning man. And when you save the drowning man, you're going to save his coat too. I can rip off the coat and say, throw this into the ocean, let's go. extending care, and that's like, you know, extending care to others, but the same principle, you know, for yourself, your own spiritual life or your immediate family. There's these other needs, and they're to be attended to, but they're to be attended to with the proper center. When the proper center is there, then attending to those other things, according to Sri Brahma Samhita, our worldly duties, are, when joined properly with devotional practice, they're as liberating. They're as liberating because we're purifying our senses by engaging our senses in service of the master of the senses, and so the senses become purified. The senses are also, and the mind, they're resting places of lust. Lust is, I want to enjoy. So we could try to just like purify the soul, but if the senses are pulling and the mind is pulling, then that's another problem. So it's very good if we can also purify our senses and purify our mind. So we purify them in practical ways, and doing the things that we do, that we have an inclination to do, albeit with, you know, an enjoying spirit, but connect that, those worldly things, with service, dedicating the service unto Krishna. So we have to make this, it's not a balance, it's make the connection between things that are of this world. They have their source in Krishna, and the proper utilization of those things is service to Krishna. That's the proper utilization of those things. Whatever to make your lists, it has its place. If it doesn't have its place in service to Krishna, then I discard it. You know, there's some other things that don't have something to do with service to Krishna. Watching television, it just doesn't have any. What does it have to do with service to Krishna? So it just, it drops. And then, but there are things that have to do with service to Krishna. I continue that, contemplating how to utilize this thing in service to Krishna. Not speculative, but as the previous purport was elaborately describing, according to the indications of the Supreme Lord. And we find how to properly apply things according to the indications of the Supreme Lord through his representatives. Just as is described, those that understand, the authorities that understand how this is the sadhu, our guru, sadhu, shastra. In light of the shastra, there's also sadhus, these great mahajans that teach us by their example. How are we to apply ourselves in different circumstances of life? And if you read the scripture very carefully, like very carefully means with the eagerness to understand how am I to live my life in harmony with God's will? Because life is filled with complexities, too much complexity. But if we're eager to receive the instructions from the scripture through the lives of the great authorities, Mahajano Yena Katha Sapanta, that we have a clue how in some complex situation of our life we can know what to do. And even more, there's Guru, the spiritual master, how do I apply this? We need that guidance and instruction. And then we can proceed, ply our way through the ocean of material existence and reach the other side. The spiritual realm. So these two verses describe the difficulty and the remedy, and the mature stage of that remedy. It's very, like, concise. Okay, so any discussion here? Any questions?
you, Maharaj, for this wonderful class. I'm understanding that the process of going back to Godhead is only through the process of disciple succession. But I'm having so much doubt. Is there any other way? The particular thing I'm thinking is, Maharaj, like, my father, he does some meditation and also he has devotion to Lord Balaji. So I wonder, what is the destination or, like, I mean, and also the other part is the process to go back is only through the disciple succession or any other.
I'm surprised you're asking the question. The disciple succession must be there. The good quality of worship is fine. And then that should be joined with a very clear and explicit connection with the disciple succession. Then it's made complete. Should we make an exception?
The doubt is going on.
If through that sincerity, if Krishna is seeing or Balaji is seeing that sincerity, then some arrangement, some opportunity will come into his life. It can be through his relationship with you. Your understanding of disciplic succession, and it's not like he has to abandon Balaji worship in order to become a member of disciplic succession. It could be Ramanuja Acharya's disciplic succession, but some disciplic succession is necessary. Something.
In the purport of the 10th verse, it was mentioned that Krishna reciprocates only to those pure devotees, not with the ones who goes to.
Can you tell me where it says that? I'm not sure it says what you just said. You want to take the book and look it up, and then we can come back to you. You can ask us if you're going to ask a question specific to something that I didn't hear, and Prema Trangini doesn't remember hearing. You look in the purport and we'll come back to you. Someone else? You got a question? No. Yes.
For the last 2-3 days, like, I had the same doubt that you addressed, that point of Brahma being having that creative impetus, and at the same time he wanted to serve the Supreme Lord. I was thinking about the same thing, like, the living entities in this material world have come here to enjoy independently of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
That impetus is very strong.
Yes.
So at the same time, now some of the souls are trying to take up the process of devotional service and
yes.
make the exit.
Yeah, you got it.
So the devotional service becomes the key.
That's right.
At the same time, some of the devotional activities seems looks like a ritualistic process. So how to come out of that?
Well, see the essence of what that activity is.
Okay.
Just like that the PowerPoint presentation yesterday where Christ said,
okay,
ritual and knowledge without compassion is empty. Yes. Same point. So something, it's just like, I gave the example of high school classes coming to our temple because they want to see our rituals. So to them, that's all they see is the ritual. We ring a bell and we wave an incense stick, and that's what we do. They don't see the here's making an offering unto Krishna. And what do we offer? We those things he likes, okay, I'll offer what he likes. But it's not just the ritual, it's the devotion with which the activity is performed. So if you see there are certain activities that are just ritualistic, it's like the high school student that just sees the RT and the Guru Puja and the classes. That's just a ritual that we do. But it's more than that. So enter into the, as Prabhupada said, when reciting the Brahma Samhita, one should daily enter into the spirit of this hymn, not just daily recite it as a ritual. Enter into the spirit of this hymn as a regular daily function. And then it grows. The spirit of the hymn is what grows. Bhakti. Anything else? Yes?
There was a point where like, we discussed that right now the seed, it's at the seed stage and it's sort of a creeper in the growth. Like, right now we are in material pool, but I think like what I'm like doubt is like when we were falling from the spiritual world, at that time we had...
Wait a minute. Don't make the mistake of placing what you're just about to describe as an event within time. Because that's to say, once upon a time, we were in the spiritual world. And we were thinking, it's so nice to be in the spiritual world. And then some time passed, and we thought, well, wait a minute. Something, something, and then we started to fall. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I forget the language now exactly, but something to the effect that don't make the mistake of asking the question, the misleading question, when was the living entity created? Because we can say the living entity is an emanation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His Tathasta Shakti. So it sounds like once upon a time the Lord was there and thought, gee, I think that there's, it'd be nice if there were some living entities. And boom, there's some living entities. And they're emanations from Him. They're emanations from Him, but it's not an event within time. So don't ask the misleading question. Now here's his language. Do not ask the misleading question, when were the living entities created? Nor when the living entities were enthralled. Because it's an event, but not an event within time as you know it. Because you're putting it within the frame of time as you know it. We'll go the other direction. Try to trace out when the living entity became enthralled. Like, here we are today. We'll go back in time and back in time and back in time and back in time. It's in, according to the language of Bhagavad Gita, it's an anadi, an event without a beginning. It's an event. But it's not an event within time. So your question is putting it as an event within time. And it's misleading. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that's the limitations of language. Because how else are we going to describe it? It looked like, feels like, smells like, tastes like an event within time. But it's not. So the frame of the question itself is misleading. That's why I stopped you. And you're using, pardon me for being blunt, but you know, you're using your tiny speculative power, or one sannyasi I know calls it a pea brain exercise of taking a flashlight and trying to find the sun. That's not how you find the sun. Your speculative powers don't disclose such things. It's not to be understood that way. So don't. Make that mistake. The simple principle that you can like get your mind around is we've misused our free will, and we can correct that. But the sequence of events, and certainly the chronology of that event, is not something that we're going to understand by your speculative power. So just don't go there, because it's not discernible that way. It's like the discussion, you heard this discussion, Lord Brahma was born atop the lotus flower and he wanted to discern, where have I come from? So he reasoned, here's this lotus, there's a stem, let me climb down the stem and I'll find out where I came from. And he came to a realization, I'm not going to find out that way. Because he couldn't find the end. So don't even go there. There are ways to know, but that's not the way to know. What Prabhupada writes in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita purport is, when we become self-realized, then we'll understand. But you can know ahead of time. It's not an event within time. Time as we know it. Did you find it?
Sorry, Maharaj, it was wrongly phrased by me. It said, the Lord is always prepared to respond to the devotees of a pure and unconditional devotee who is free from all tinges of material infection. So, what...
What about people that aren't free from all tinges of material infection? What happens to them? Is that your question?
Yeah, that question on the same lines like when we chant...
It's proportionate to... You surrender to Krishna 10%. He reciprocates 10%. 50%. 50%. 90%. 90%. 100%. 100%. Proportionate to. It's not a one and a zero.
My question related to that is like when we beg for a service while chanting, or we beg for a service, right, Maharaj?
Yeah, Brahma's begging.
Right. So is that asking for a service is a pure desire, or is how
it,
do
it could be mixed. Maybe I want a service so that I can show off how I can do something. I want some position. And they get recognition and honor from others. And maybe not so gross, but, you know, something. So it can be mixed. Practically everything is a service. So, like, whatever. Okay? Mix. Commonly. I mean, till we're pure, that's what it's going to be, a mix. And that, then proportionate to. Therefore, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam anukugena krishna anushimanam. Even if, here's the good news. Even if we're cultivating that, we're not there yet, but we're cultivating that, that counts. It counts as it's considered by Rupa Goswami or by Lord Chaitanya or by the Bhagavatam, it's considered as uttam bhakti. Because the seed, just like this other discussion about, you know, material spiritual, if the cultivation is on the spiritual side. It doesn't mean the material will fall off and like disappear. I may very well continue. Some things of life may also disappear, but I may very well continue in my life, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, for example, in the life of a pure devotion as a high court judge in the British government. Or a king. one may relinquish that service also. But what's essential is what the thing for your question. Where your attention should go is in for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, or praying to the Supreme Lord as Queen Kunti did. Please take away the material portion of my affinity for my relations with others, and that's in the social arena, then the mental and the physical. So let me come to that stage where I'm doing things not for the satisfaction of my own desires, but simply for your satisfaction. And that, by cultivating like that, I may not be at that topmost stage. If I'm cultivating like that, Krishna accepts it in this other category. And gradually that's mature stage will come. The good fortune that we have is to understand that even at this stage, because if we don't have that understanding at this stage, we'll just go on thinking like most people think. This is religious, this is good. You know the way of thinking. I had the opportunity yesterday evening to explain to someone who's just beginning, like really beginning their devotional practice, when they have RT. And so they were asking, what should we do to begin in our practice as grihasthas? I have a small child. Do something with the family that's like a devotional activity together. I suggested RT. And reading from Krishna book together, so that way your child can hear Krishna book and the family can have some devotional activity together. And second thing is the control of the tongue through chanting and taking Krishna prasadam, eating and vibrating activities of the tongue. Pay attention to those two things. So then they had a question on the RT. Well, you know, we're new. We don't know how to do RT like you have done. And we've been accustomed to the Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. And I, you know what that is? Yes, I know what that is. So, is that okay? Now, how would you answer a question like that? The answer that I gave was, first it was acceptance. It's okay. In course of time, you know, you'll become a little more familiar with how in our society how we do RT. But you know, but they, you know, went voiced one more time. I sensed that, you know, there was a willingness to move from that position. So I said, well, frankly, this Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare is an appeal for material stuff. That's what it is. So I said, think of it this way. If your child came to you and said, Mommy, it's cold out. Can I have a jacket? And you're already thinking, it's cold out. My child needs a jacket. Or, Mommy, it's very hot out. Can I have some water? I'm thirsty. You're thinking already. But supposing your child said, Mommy, you're supplying everything to us. Is there something I can do for you? What is that? You know, how would you feel? Like, wow. Because you're already ready to supply everything your child needs. They don't have to come and ask you for, you know, I have something to eat. You're already doing those things. You're very happy to do those things too. They got it. Oh. Okay. Well, we'll have to make some adjustment over here, but yeah, I think we can do that. Because that's the training that we're receiving. What can I do for you? How can I serve you? Please engage me in your service. So we don't It's right in the purport also, seeing the Lord as one's order supplier is not recommended. I mean, he is our order supplier. He supplies everything, whatever it is that we have anyways. But to see that's the basis of the relationship. I do something nice for you, and I'm expecting you to give something nice to me. And if something nice doesn't come, I think you've disappointed me. I got this something not nice came. You know, what's wrong with you? You're not doing your part. Tendency. So, the nurturing on the side of not just service, because that was your specific question, but free from any self-interest of service. Cultivate like that. Right? Anything else? Yes.
Well, Maharaj, the question about what we explained yesterday, about when your suitcase didn't come.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, because of you are completely satisfied with the service to Supreme Lord, and you yourself were wondering, like, why your mind was not going, like, what to do with the stuff. So my question is, like,
I wasn't so much wondering why, I was appreciating this is the fruit of devotional service.
Yes.
You know, it's important that you a little deviation over here on emotional intelligence. You've heard of that phrase before? It's a popular current phrase, emotional intelligence. One of the things they recommend is this detachment. First, the first principle is focus. In our case, focus on chanting. Learn to control the mind by focusing it on the all attractive. So let the mind become accustomed to being focused on the all attractive. Now, the next step is you regard what's going on, and like a third person observer, you're observing what happens to the mind. You know, where the mind goes is where your attachments are. Like, you know, something shocking happens. You're driving along in your car, another car comes. You know, where do your thoughts go? Monitoring that tells you, you know, where your attachments are. So I was just remarking, wow, just see this. I remember, I didn't say it, but I remember another one, that I was attending New York Rath Yatra, and I planned it in such a way that I had something else going on somewhere else. So I just came in the morning of Rath Yatra, and I came in LaGuardia Airport, and somebody picked me up and put my stuff in the trunk of their car, and they dropped me off at the beginning of the parade. I was in the parade, and at the end, the festival was over, so I went to their car and, you know, went home and opened up the trunk, and my computer was gone out of the trunk, right in Midtown Manhattan. I mean, they didn't park right by the parade. It was like they were in Midtown. And, you know, as much as my services depended upon the computer, didn't freak out. Just like I made a very firm resolve, I'm not going to let this happen again. I'm not going to leave my stuff thinking, oh, it's okay, it's in the trunk, it's out of sight, I know. I take it with me. And another one happened. I was like, from the car to a temple, it was in India, there was stuff in my bag that wasn't there when I got to my room. It was money. You know, I wanted to carry it, But someone, oh, Maharaj, let me carry it. You shouldn't carry it. You know, some are service-minded and some are thief-minded. Someone relieved me of the Lakshmi that I had in my bed. And I decided I'm not going to let that happen again. So, you know, I'm disclosing some things that others may not know what's going on, but there was a sannyasi that I was staying in the room with in New York, that Rath Yatra, and he commented, wow. And I didn't even notice it at the time. It was just like, it's gone, I'm going to have to replace it, and I'm just not going to make that mistake again. He was remarking, wow, this is... And there's other examples. When there's sufficient attachment to Krishna, when I joined the movement, I had a car, little Volkswagen Bug, you know, that time that was like very popular. It was used, but it was like, you know, it was very operable. And so I was living in the Boston Temple, and they, Satsrup Maharaj, who was the president at the time, was Grahastha at the time, asked, can we borrow your car? We have to go see the printer at Kingsport Press. I said, sure. And the person who drove it didn't keep track of the oil, and the engine seized. The car died. You know, it was like useless. And he had to come and report it to me. And he was like, I remember specifically, he took me out on the porch alone, and, you know, like, I have some bad news to tell you. Your car's dead. We borrowed it and we can't return it. It's like, we don't have the resources to replace it either. And, you know, I was detached. I didn't like, oh, my car. He was surprised. Then on top of that, then in order to release the car, because it was at a place where they sent me by bus to go to a place and identify the car and sign some papers. And when I came back, I was like, we're so glad you came back. They got on my case for sending you, because you could have just like left. So, attachment to Krishna is critical when we're in this world, because things come, not only things go, but things also come. Something may come, and now I become elated when something comes. I get, you know, going back to this other, I get some service, I get some position, I get some honor, I get some distinction, I get some recognition, I get something. Oh, I'm so happy. And then they didn't recognize me. Or I did, you know, it's the other way. I lost something. Hankering and lamenting over material circumstances. That's what happens when there's an absence of Krishna consciousness. In all of our cases, without exception, we're all eternal servants of Krishna. The degree to which we're Krishna conscious, we're seeing what we're doing in relation to service to Krishna. That's what Krishna consciousness means. And then whatever it is that we're doing, it's in relation to Krishna. Whatever it is. Whatever it is. And it's not ashram specific. It's just be a spirit soul. That's all of us. We're part and parcel of Krishna. We're meant for serving Him. As we're attached to Him, we can be not careless, not irresponsible, but not attached with the things that are of this world, that come and they go. We just, this type of service, that type of service, by Krishna's arrangement. Okay? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Mr. Srila Rupa Maharaj ki
jai.